space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon.
And
we're going to go to with the thing. Is it anyway?
Okay. Oh, very good. You mirror dragon. Yeah. Okay.
That's about what it deserved, in all fairness.
So we're here to talk about the next two episodes of Prodigy. A Tribble Called Quest and Cracked Mirror.
It was a little bit of Star Trek news this week.
Oh, they're starting filming of
filming Academy, which it isn't anything massive, but it is nice to know that these new Trek being filmed.
Yeah, very true.
And it's about the first week that they've mentioned Academy and not given us an extra member of the cast. Like,
that's
it seemed
true.
Like every
week
they were giving us new cast. It was amazing.
Well, they did have the cast like picture together, and there is a lot of people in that picture. Yeah. So
I suppose you have to if you're doing an Academy show.
I think so.
We don't have to fly the whole class, but I'm in.
Well, I think you've got to have all classes, haven't you?
No, but if you think about Saved by the Bell, you follow your main six, and then you've got other people scattered about. It's that seems like a big ancillary cast, but I'm up for it. And like it shows, I like the idea that they're going to focus on the students, and then one episode, one of the older cast might be more featured than another.
It's a good lesson. I mean, we know very little about how it's going to play, but. I'm looking forward to it, and
I'm still not massive. I got more excited when I heard Robert Picardo was in it, but it's
cool.
It's not one that's grabbed my attention. I wasn't massively into Saved by the Bell. I think I was probably too old for it by the time it got round. I was never into any of your Beverly Hills 90210s or any of that sort of thing. So it hasn't grabbed me as something that I'm.
Okay, it could be the Beverly Hills Billies of its day. I don't know, like, what your cultural touch on it. No, I'm just making a mess. But no, it's, I mean, to be honest with you, I think what I'm kind of, what's not got me excited yet, it's just I don't know what it is quite. It's like, how do you make it into a TV show following classes?
No, that's
like, there was the early thing, wasn't there, where they were saying that it could be a soap, like, it was supposed to be more like a soap opera sort of thing. And I don't watch soap operas. The only soap opera I've ever followed was Santa Barbara, and I watched that because it was so bad it was funny.
I'm hoping it'll be like, you know, there's something dark happening at the Academy, like maybe a Contagion 2 kind of thing, make that whole series or something like that could be interesting.
Best case scenario is it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer but Star Trek.
Yeah, I could go for that.
Yeah. That I would love. I just don't want it to be sort of, for want of a better metaphor, like Grey's Anatomy, but like
I don't.
You know, like a different kind of engineering drama each week. Like, I need something to be actually happening.
It's way too early to say at the minute, so we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll bring any news that we get. But
of course, we will be watching it, and we will be talking about it. Whatever.
Absolutely.
It's like. Oh, obviously,
if we could stick with Discovery Season 4, we could watch anything.
That's very true.
Very true. I mean, I think for me, I think it's the fact that, like, usually when you hear about new Star Trek, like, all we've got is the title and then loads of cast announcements and not a lot about the plot. And usually a lot about the plot. The same thing we were saying about Section 31, really.
Mm-hmm.
You need what the plot of that is, not just like Section 31, very cool, but tell us what that is as a story here.
Yeah. Well, as I say, we'll keep an eye on it. But for now, we've got more great Prodigy to talk about. And we're a little bit of a step off the accelerator this week. There's still plenty going on. There's still great episodes. But after the fireworks of the last four episodes, which were both two-parters, we're at least getting a little bit of a breather this time round.
It is. It's almost like If you were doing a binge watch of it and you had it on for like your weekend, you put your Saturday aside and you go, right, I've got up, I've had my breakfast, it's 9 o'clock, I'm starting to watch this. This would be maybe getting to tea time and you're thinking, yeah, I could be nipping in and out of the kitchen and just watching bits of this one because it's almost two filler episodes. Don't get me wrong, they're really good filler episodes, but the filler episodes from the main story.
Yeah, I mean, the one which was early in the series, which was less gripping for me. These two are kind of quite gripping episodes for four episodes about the main plot. Like, they've got legacy. Like, one's got legacy with the Tribbles, which always is exciting.
Well, they've both got legacy.
And yeah, I was going to say, in the second one is time travel goodness, which, like, seems to be a sequel to a Voyager episode very specifically in a very weird way, even though the cause and effect are not connected whatsoever. It's the same plot, but done with Prodigy, which I'm all for.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely a step up from the racing one. And the Tribble episode starts then. I love the, like, it's got the voiceover scene about how he's a star born and bloody blah. But the visuals are just lovely, how it's showing the cosmos and everything. It's a great looking show anyway, but just that particular shot was brilliant.
Yeah, as I said, the animation is absolutely top draw. It's really knocked out the park.
And I was just instantly grabbed by the fact that it was Rock doing the log. You know, it's like she's leading it. And that was really nice. Like, that instantly was like, oh, we've got a Rock episode. That's really cool. I like the fact that
it does make sense that it's Rock, though, because Rock is the scientist and it's very science-based. I'm all for that. Yeah, I don't think we're quite ready for Murph to do the opening log.
Maybe not.
Please, the Murph-centric episode. Please, just like season three Murph episode, please.
We might get there one day. Who knows?
And I don't want any translation. I just run, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I mean, I think Rock is always an amazing character, but I can't think of many where she's laid, though. So this was really cool. It really got me,
Let's see, and it ties in what was just like a totally throwaway line early in the season, which was Rock talking about how she's come up with a thing to cure Tribbles of the incessant breeding. And then we actually get a follow-up to that, which I didn't expect. But, you know, it's nice how they've done that.
It's very clever planning, isn't it? For a kids' show, it's very clever planning to have a throwaway line early on when he talks about what they're doing at the academy and stuff, and then actually pay it off.
I feel like Trials and Tribulations, I feel like the whole Klingon War against Tribbles was sort of a throwaway little comedy moment, which has become this episode. But we've got we know her as a huge Chakotay fan. It's our friend Jodie. She's on there I love the animation. And did you see her updated picture? I think that's just very sweet.
There we go. Yeah. It's we cannot get enough Chakotay on this podcast. So
she is the biggest Chakotay fan girl, as we know.
If everyone wants to change their profile picture to Chakotay, that's more than welcome. Speaking of Chakotay, though, I like that they carried on his character work from last episode. We established that sort of relationship between him and Dal, and they had that heart to heart where he completely denounced his time with the Maquis, but never mind.
Let's be honest though, Voyager pretty much denounced the Maquis.
Yeah, it's true.
First episode,
basically. It's like, the Badlands where all the Maquis died. It's like, sorry, what? It was so.
Well, it was the Dominion, wasn't it? DS9 explained it, but
it was kind of brushed over even then. It was just like, it was sort of just referred to past tense.
Oh, yeah, it was just like, now the Dominion have reinforced the Cardassians, they've killed them all. But that,
was quite torn up about that.
Yes, she was, at least she acknowledged the action,
but it's just they never really tackled in any detail what happened. Like, that seems like it should have been an episode somewhere. Even in flashback of what happened to them, you know, precisely.
I mean,
the Dominion took care of them. Okay, they seem like a pretty big plot point to just kill off.
I think it was one of those where they'd done things with the Maquis, They'd set it up to do something. Voyager totally dropped the ball on it when it had been set up that they were going to have Marquee. They totally dropped the ball on it. And it was sort of like, well, we don't really need the Marquee in DS9.
It's
almost like another storyline that we've got too many other things going on to actually really do this massively. Like, we've got a nice part with Eddington.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, as far as I remember, basically, they've got Torres just acting nuts. And then we find out it's because she found out before that. But I think we should have had her hearing a log, like, you know, and maybe had some flashbacks to them getting slaughtered. You know, something that's really, even if you don't show the whole thing, because they are like in the Delta Quadrant, like it's something which shows it and shows how horrific it was. And we should have felt her pain a lot better. Whereas she just like, oh no, I'm putting the safeties off on the holodeck. It's like,
We should have had a scene with Chakotay going, oh, well, the Mackie never liked them guys anyway. And just carrying on with his day. But no,
nicely to his character in Prodigy.
Yeah, I was going to praise him, though, for when he says nice work to Dali. He's taking on this kind of mentor role with him, which I really liked that.
And I think almost around him, it is triggering the next sort of stage of Dal growing up, because he's grown up to become a captain. Now he's kind of got to grow into the position, what that means and what he wants for his future and everything. It's,
exactly. So I'm really liking the work they're doing there. But this episode's about the Tribbles. So they find a Tribble on the planet, and it's a bitey Tribble. And then it's giant Tribbles. And we get this sort of Indiana Jones sequence where they're running away from the giant Tribble rolling towards them. And we get Murph being cool, which is great, that Murph does the stretchy thing to save everybody. And it's just a really good fun action sequence, but it does mean Zero gets injured, so is Zero's new body as stable as they might have hoped that it was? I wonder if that'll be explored more.
Well, let's remember when he got the body, it was said on the planet that they can't leave the planet.
Yeah, they don't know what will happen. And now we've got vicious Tribbles attacking it.
And basically, they said to him, it's like, make sure you're really careful with that body. And as soon as he's, of course, in that action, it starts getting damaged.
Yeah.
But there is a Klingon on the planet as well, which does reference the great Klingon Tribble War. Which, if you're going to do these one-off TV movies, like your Section 31, let's have the Klingon Tribble War. Let's see it.
Like, to be fair, they could do that instead of one of the series. You know, like, it has been talked about before, sort of doing an anthology series.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you make the Tribbles, apart from these Tribbles, obviously, they're badass, but it's like the ordinary standard Tribble, which heavily suggested is what they were dealing with before, because that's why this planet's an anomaly. It's hard to make their medicine like they could.
I know, I think you get a really good director in, you do it all with shadows and darkness, and it's like the first Alien movie, but, you know, you barely see it. It's just a Tribble lurking in the background.
I can go back further than that. It's Doctor Who, the first episode with the Daleks, they always had it in shadows, and, like, the plunger and, like the Dalek weapons always in shadow and everything. And you see it through their eye stalk as well, all techniques they use when they reintroduce the Daleks. So it goes way back to the 60s with the Daleks. That effect.
Yeah. Well, absolutely, and that's how you can make the Tribbles scary. I do enjoy that this Klingon, like, they call it out that he's got a nuanced dialect, so the universal translator doesn't work. And I don't think we've ever done this, where we've had bits where the translator hasn't been able to translate because it's a totally new language. But I just think it's a nice touch that it's like, oh, it's a really strong dialect, so the translator can't do it immediately.
I'm trying to think what you might get with this. If maybe someone with a really strong Glaswegian accent.
This like theory.
A really, really strong accent.
Sorry, mate.
I was just going to say, all that speaks in slang or something.
Well, yeah, you've got like, I mean, in Scotland, famously, there's quite a few people in Scotland which Siri doesn't work with because it can't work out the Scottish accent to any level. But yeah, it reminds me of whenever I'm over in Ireland, and it's like, for most of Ireland, I can understand the accent to a larger tolerance than a lot of people because of my family over there and stuff. So I'm kind of used to it to a degree. There's some parts of like rural Ireland, though. It's like you cannot cut that accent with a knife. Like the universal translator, yeah. Fuck off away from that. And same thing in Scotland, all that. So yeah. And let's face it, parts of the West Country and stuff, it does get really thick. So yeah.
It's like my granddad had a heavy Scottish accent, and then he moved to Geordie land. So as he got older, a bit of Geordie crept in. And yeah, a lot of people just could not understand a word that he said. I struggled sometimes. Anyway, so we get a bird of prey, the classic bird of prey, which is always great to see.
That'd be a good bop.
When you go bird of prey on a planet, always makes me think of Star Trek 3. Is it 4 before they launch?
Well, 3 and 4, yeah. You get that great shot of it landing in 3, which is a beautiful shot.
The bounty.
And then, yeah, so it's a Klingon scientist, which we've not had a lot of, but, you know, it's often speculated, Klingons must have other than the warrior class.
We did get that in Enterprise, though, didn't we?
That's what I mean. We've not had a lot of it, but it is nice when they show.
We had the Klingon xenobiologist in TNG when they went looking for the alien that we got in Discovery Season 5.
True, yeah.
I believe you guys have raised the point that I think in some context you said that Chakotay might be a bit speciesist in some certain episodes. First thing he says to this guy was like, "Klingon scientists don't get many of those." He really spikes that line very hard. Like, I'm going, it's like, dude, okay.
Yeah,
he's just like, that's a little rude, you know. And plus, I mean, like, they must have some scientists. They've got ships and stuff.
Well, like, I've always assumed the Klingons are a caste system. So the ones that we normally come into contact with is the warrior class, because they're the ones who are out in the spaceships and all that.
Yeah, fighting everything.
But there must be a caste system for your other, like, your workers and your scientists.
They've got to have people
that.
Who do There's things.
Got, yeah.
My assumption is most of those, though, like, you know, physical work, that's obviously, that which, can be sold as
a warrior-like. I think I always imagine it more being like, is there the Minbari from Babylon 5, how their caste system
I was thinking that when you said that. I always thought there was, like, it's mostly warrior, and, like, you know, things like physical work is still seen as warrior-like, and that's fine and everything.
Yeah.
And stuff like science, it's like, if you can't do physical stuff in the battlefield for whatever reason, if you do science, you're still respected. If you don't, then maybe that's when you're seen as dishonorable, but it's still like honorable work to be an engineer.
You do
even
get
though
with
it's not traditional.
Though, that it, like the warrior class and the religious class and the worker class, they're all capable of fighting still. They are still highly trained, but they have specific things that they do.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, the Klingons are a hugely advanced civilization. They've got warp travel, they've got cloaking device. Somebody's had to invent it all.
Yeah.
What's that mean? They're too unable to take it from some other species or learn, you know, or buy it. I think it seems tacky to them somehow.
Yeah, I've always thought there must be.
But this guy's been sent to. Yeah.
And that's my head.
So this guy's been sent to. To work out how to defeat the Tribbles, and he came up with a plan, and straight away Rock can go, "Oh no, this is where you've gone wrong," because as we know, Rock knows how to do it anyway.
Just while we're on this very, very specific bit, I think it was Elliot who said when we were talking about, did we talk about this kind of like off mic on a thing about where this kind of comes from, the mutation? Because It seems to be a line from The Trouble with Edwards.
I was thinking it's the trouble. Well, I was thinking that'd make more sense. Like, instead of the cuddly Tribbles that we got in Trials and Tribulations and The Trouble with Tribbles, because they always came across as quite cuddly, even though they bred quite a lot. But when we saw The Trouble with Edwards, how they suddenly became meat eaters, and also how the... bred hugely fast.
because he talks about like how he changed the chromosome and that's why they breed so fast. So it's like, because again, I'm sure we had this conversation off mic or something about like, is this okay to do? Because like, are they interfering? But then we figured out because Edward's already genetically modified.
Yeah.
Okay. Or were we talking about another episode? But this all rings a bell. But certainly, kind of, it sounds like what she's talking about is basically rectifying stuff, which I'm sure there was a line which he said, which was similar to that, to what she's saying.
Yeah, because like,
and I got the impression in this episode that it was the Klingon, that it was him experimenting to try and wipe them out, and that's why the ones on this planet are like this.
Oh yeah, that bit. But I mean, the solution which he gives, I think, is the reverse of what Edwards does, like, in the first place, to make them breathe really fast and stuff.
Yeah,
like, the trouble with Edwards is set before the trouble with Tribbles as an episode.
Yeah,
and that's where they're coming off the first planet and where they sort of get out into the galaxy because of him, because he's discovered this species that breathes like this. And his experiment was literally to make them breathe faster, but make them really tasty to solve a food problem.
And they do mention.
I like the. Go on.
No, you go, mate.
No, go on.
No, you.
No, I was just going to say, I like the way they sort of dovetail everything this episode. Like, we're here to find this thing that we need to make the sun. But it just so happens that that's in the Tribble nest. So I like the way they dovetail the two things that you've got going on.
Yeah.
And I love that they describe it as a problem-tunity.
Yes, which is... they basically take that from the Simpsons prostitunity. Like Lisa says, the same word for crisis and opportunity. It's the same word in Japanese, I think she says. And then Homer goes, "Yes, crisis opportunity." I swear, this has got to be an animated nod to that.
But it shows that it's also aimed as a kid show, because that is something that kids would say, young kids trying to. It's a problem and an opportunity. Oh, proper opportunity.
I can bet you animation nerds who worked on the show, though, and basically comedy nerds, did not miss the fact that this was like, I think they came to it and then they went, oh, that's like the Simpsons thing. Brilliant. Let's keep it. It'll be a nice
joke.
Well, that's like the joke that runs through South Park, isn't it? The Simpsons did it first.
And it's always done with such love. I think some people don't get that. It's like, they love animation. Then animation, like Matt and Trey, who do South Park, they said it's like, of course we love The Simpsons. They're the best thing ever. Like, you know, we can only hope to be as good as them. When someone's saying about rivalry and stuff, they go, no, that's fucking brilliant. You know, and all these people who work in these animations, all these comedy nerds, will have grown up loving The Simpsons like we did.
Of course.
This just seems like a blatant kind of nod to them without, you know, treading on the toe, like a cheeky little nod, you know, it's nice.
Yeah. And we get a few, like, character moments as well, like Michelle and Gwyn have a bit of a heart-to-heart, and at the same time, Rock realises that something's gone wrong because we've made this super cute, I think they call it a gribble in the next episode, which that is a nod to the New Frontier books, because there's a villain in an episode called a Gribble that's a cross between a gerbil and a tribble. And it turns out that it's a super villain, which thankfully isn't the case here. But this is what leads to their salvation, really, because they find the stuff they need, but they're surrounded by the tribbles, and then this new super cute tribble manages to call them all off, and that's how they get out of the predicament this episode.
We've also get a given nod to Rock's crisis of conscience, much like Data's in season one. Is it season one or season two? I think it's season one of Next Gen, when he makes a mistake and he's like, he just goes into meltdown over it. And it's just, it's a lovely theme, which I think is played differently enough here.
Yeah.
But yeah, really, I like that, because especially you've got to remember, this is one of those moments whereby it acknowledges that they are super intelligent. They are the right crew to be in charge of the ship. However, they are young adults or young people. I can't think of what age exactly all of them are. I get the feeling Rock's meant to be younger, but there's
maybe so.
Rock's a lot younger.
Yeah, so I get the feeling though they it may be intelligence wise mature a bit quicker, but like maybe emotional wise they're still children. But I like that. I like the fact they kind of basically signpost like, yeah, they're really good, but they're still kids. They're still going to have issues when they fuck up. That's going to hit them in a way maybe would be able to process it better. Because basically with Data, it's because he's got no emotional maturity. He's got the intellectual, and it takes Picard going, it's like, just fucking step out of it, bitch. You know, so he basically just tells him to get his shit together. And it's the most Picard way of dealing. Like, there's no, like, Counselor Troy is like...
Like, we have the same feelings.
Like, no, fucking snap out of it.
We have the Robert Picardo episode as well in Voyager, don't we? When the Dwight's part of his memory and he discovers he had to make a decision to save one or the other. And he couldn't because... Well, he made the decision, but... He sort of freaked out because no, he couldn't make the decision. Someone else had to, and they had to wipe his memory.
Yeah,
because both of them were being hit with the same thing.
No, he did make the one. He made the decision, and then they had to wipe his memory. So he did. He did make the decision. But yeah, no, that's a stunning episode. A very underrated Voyager episode, I think.
Actually. No, that's a good one.
I can't remember what it's called, but
isn't it called Hippocratic Oath, or is that another one?
I'm not sure.
That's DS9.
But yeah, his memory had been wiped for three years.
Yeah.
And they kept wiping it every time he discovered that it was causing problems with his memory, why he had to remember.
And he actually reads it. One thing of he reads the bit about the Hippocratic Oath in a book or something like that. That's probably one thing of, because you're right, it was the quickening storyline with Hippocratic Oath, but that's not
the thing. So I enjoy the Klingons singing the Klingon victory song at the end once the Tribbles are driven off. I do love this. I know we only get references to it here and there, but the fact that the Klingons do treat the Tribbles as mortal enemies is just great. It's one of those just ridiculous things, but they play it totally straight every time it comes up, and it's brilliant.
And I think this episode's just unashamedly sweet. It's just a sweet episode it's got Tribbles in it, which are always fun. You can always get comedy out there. You get the Klingons versus the Tribble, which, again, always fun. You get some serious moments. You get some hike. You get, like, emotional growth in it. And at the end of it, you have obtained the Protostar star.
Yeah.
That moves the plot forward as well. It's a really nicely placed and nicely pieced episode, I would say.
It is. It's very good. And it leaves us, as you say, ready, latent image. That's the episode. Thank you, Chakotay.
Thanks, Joe Chakotay.
Oh, that's a good one. They set a course back to Voyager, and that's where we leave them, which leads in nicely into the next episode, where straight away they get back to Voyager, and Chakotay has cleaned himself up and got his uniform on. And the subtext of Chakotay and Janeway has more or less just become the text here, because Chakotay is lamenting the fact that, I've dreamed about seeing her, but I wished I had 10 years later and that I hadn't gone grey. And so it's like...
Well, they might be more the same age now, won't they?
Well, they are the same
possibly,
age.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, she was older than him in Voyager.
Oh, I never considered that.
I'm not sure, to be honest. Sure.
Oh, because he'll have... So he's grown...
He's 10 years older.
Yeah, because of all the timey-wimey stuff that's gone on, he's now...
I didn't even think about that.
10 years older than what he was when he...
No, you're right. I didn't even think about that. I just assumed... No, you're right. Yeah, of course. Yeah,
which is why he's all like, oh, will Janeway still love me with me grey hair?
Well, may I point out, there was some subtext in there, though, that you may have missed, where it's like the subtext between him and Admiral Janeway is textual, but Hologram Janeway says it's like... Well, there's no point in wondering what might have been, in a very suggestive way, that maybe
I think Chakotay's been nobbing Hologram Janeway for 10 years.
Without a doubt.
I know, I'm just saying, with the text, as the way that little moment passed between them, I think he tried to nob her, and she turned him down.
No,
Well, it's
hologram Janeway because it could have very easily just altered a program to let him.
Well, that's it. Maybe he's been wiping a memory of it.
To her memory, the way she delivered that line, to her memory, it hasn't happened. The thing you're saying, yeah, that's possible. But I'm saying to her memory, that suggests that she was saying to him what might have been, as in, this never happened between us, according to her anyway.
That's why he didn't.
Really interesting line to put in there.
I agree with you. I'm being facetious.
I
think that's why Chakotay didn't go with Dead Bird Guy, because he was like, look, last time I was marooned on a planet with just Janeway, they only went and found a fucking Vidian with a cure, didn't they? I'd have cracked that case once that monkey died. I'd have been fine.
Do you know the problem is they had on the holodeck holographic monkey. That's the problem.
But no, it is nice that he smartens himself up and everything, and he's ready, you know, he wants to impress. And I enjoy Hollow Janeway making a laser pointer to play with the Gribble. That's good
stuff. So cool. And I love it. It's like, she even says, like, oh, I'm usually more of a dog person. Cue Willow.
Yeah. She'll have been programmed. Yeah.
And that was really nice. Like, I just thought it was a lovely touch to bring in a reference to Molly the dog, I believe.
Yeah. And then we get Molly. The Doctor greets Chakotay, very happy to see him. But we find out that Jellicoe's actually in charge of this, and Janeway went into the wormhole and died.
Yeah, this was quite a nice little switch and bait, I thought.
Yeah.
How they did this, because when the first beam over, you think, yeah, there's nothing wrong because the Doctor recognises them. He recognises that they've gone off looking for Chakotay.
Yeah.
He knows they've found Chakotay. So he's all thinking, so you get the impression, yeah, everything is normal. And then it hits you with the Admiral.
Yeah, it's really well done.
As with all these like Mirror Universe episodes, it's just always lovely the cameos you can bring out. So like you get Jellicoe back. I mean, he seems a more obvious like bring back than our later person who pops up, which I won't foreshadow too much. But it's like, I mean, I didn't see him coming back once, twice. I mean, I love Star Trek from this. It's like they really Star Trek is just having so much fun with bringing back characters like Locarno, like who thought he was coming back
The
beauty of doing animation is that you've got these legacy characters you can bring back that, like, let's be honest, some of these characters appeared 40 years ago nearly.
You don't have to worry about
the age and all that and how old they look. As long as they can still sound the same, you can make them whatever age you want with animation.
I mean, in all fairness, this is a number of years later. You know, pretty much they can be those ages anyway. Yeah. But like you say, you can bring back anyone in any time frame and it just works.
Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, I mean, the one thing I also enjoyed is, as I've said, the one thing about this series of Star Trek is it is bringing every mode of time travel ever mentioned in Star Trek, even briefly. So now you add to that the Twisted, I believe, was the name of the episode. Or no, that was another one.
The Voyager episode, Twisted, where things were different at different parts of the ship,
Was that Twisted? I thought it was season one where it was like, or series
that
two?
That is season one.
No, I'm talking about the later one with Chakotay going through different times on the
holodeck. I can't remember the title.
That also was in the Hololift that he went through time zones, I believe.
Yes,
so this is
it was.
Basically a straight up sequel to that one. Like, who thought anyone needed to bring back that method of time travel? But no, they bring that one in as well. They've got the time traveler, the traveler time travel. You've got the grandfather paradox has been brought in. You've got the predestination time paradox has been brought in. You've got the Gary 7 version of time, like every version of time travel ever.
Yeah. To be fair, this isn't time travel. This is hopping.
This is dimension
travel, but I still...
We get to the Mirror Universe in a minute, but before then, I think this is who Squee was alluding to. They go down in the turbo lift only to find everybody's favourite character ever, the outrageous Akona.
It's like, again, no one was going to call. No one was calling out for him reappearing once. I mean, I loved it when he did. Don't get me wrong, but certainly twice. Like,
yeah,
twice. Shame on me, you know. But I loved mean, it.
But this makes sense why he's there, because we have him established as a scavenger in this time zone.
True.
And this is where, the Protostar did destroy the Federation. So he's out scavenging the Federation and selling stuff.
Actually, yeah, no, it makes sense.
And there's no one to stop him because the Federation's been wiped out.
The only thing I thought would have been fun to bring in here is if, I'd say fun, but interesting to bring in here, would have been them having a reaction to the fact that this is a universe which was destroyed by...
Yeah,
that they prevented. I would have appreciated that in here. I mean, don't get me wrong, Stone Cold, amazing episode anyway. But like, I would have thought an emotional reaction to a universe where your actions did end up when you came so close.
I think that because they've established that the alternate realities already, that you don't have to put any emotional context for them.
No, but what I'm saying.
Because they're in a different reality where, yeah, them in that reality are to blame or have some responsibility for it, however you want to frame it. But they know that they are not to blame for this. They are just in a different reality.
Yeah.
I don't think they have got that emotional attachment to it.
No,
I would argue if you came that close, then that's going to haunt you forever.
Yeah,
the Federation, and some people did at least must have got harmed, even though they kind of skirted over it because it's an animation.
It could have still been a wow moment like that. You know, the grace of God go I sort of thing. Yeah,
and you know, even though they know it's not them, like in lots of Mirror Universe things, they have that moment of like, even though I know it's not me, I feel like it's me because I'm seeing this result.
Yeah,
my counterpart's done. We get so close to doing this.
Yeah. Or even just like, I hate the fact that any version of me did this. You know, that kind of thing. There's emotional layers you can build up.
Maybe the one fault with the episode is that we don't get to see the Captain Tuvix that's mentioned as being in charge that's just great. That's fantastic. It would have been nice to have seen him.
Can we also, there's later on when they come back, just to do the Tuvix and one kind of hit. But yeah, when they came back, I was like, I'm just disappointed this all got resolved before I got to try the Captain Tuvix's Talaxian Vulcan fusion.
Yes.
Like, we do get that species from season one that they found on the planet, don't we? That had been worshipping Galileo 2 shuttle.
Oh, yes. You got Starflight.
But we just get a little clip of them on the ship, and it's not like, oh, how they get here.
Yeah, just doing those lovely little cameos to episode past, even if you don't get characters. I felt like I was in that episode.
It's literally a couple of seconds that you get it in, but immediately it's like, I know them uniforms.
Yeah.
And they even played the original series bridge, kind of like you go,
yes.
some sound effects in the background. Just, it's lovely. That's enough to invoke it.
Yeah. And yeah, they need to go to the bridge, and there's a thing that Gwyn's dimensional thingy.
Hers is to keep us.
Yeah, keep her in.
The time fluctuation she's going through is to keep her grounded in the same time and the same dimension.
So because of this, they have to beam up to the bridge. But unfortunately, that sends them to the Mirror Universe, which I didn't expect to see the Mirror Universe, but I'm totally there for it. I'm glad we've got it.
There's some really lovely touches in this one. So you've got the fact that Mirror Janeway dyes her hair because she hasn't got the greatest.
And she also looks like she's a
Morg implant.
Yeah.
Morg implants.
Which could actually suggest that might be why she doesn't have the grey. Actually, now you say that,
yeah,
that would be good. Like, maybe it's kept her physical form younger because
you know
the nanobots can do all sorts of things. Actually, that would explain a lot because she does seem fairly spry. I don't mean to insult
Star Trek, my version of Janeway from the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
That's nice. You get the Agonizer, which I love when Jenka Pog, when he goes like, it's like, Agonizer, why didn't you just call the thing that calls pain thing? Like, he gives another name. It's just, it's great. I love it when they call out the kind of like,
yeah, the ridiculousness of it. Mirror Janeway and Mirror Chakotay are definitely shagging.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, when they're talking about, like, I like Chakotay getting a bit hammy with, ooh, who shall I agonize? Ooh.
Like Jodie says, like Janeway and Chakotay forever. Janeway and Chakotay forever.
Well, they are in this universe, which is nice. But he picks the wrong one because he picks Murph that he's going to agonize.
Well, it's not like how he's looking and goes, I'll go for the cute one.
It's like, yeah. Oh, no, don't go for the cute one, says Jenka Pog. And you just know what's going to happen. And it's even Murph playing into it going, oh, no, I'm in trouble.
Like, yeah. Yeah, really good.
Give me all the mirth. Give me all the mirth.
This leads to our Chakotay has to draw a fake beard on. Right.
Okay, this is one of the problems I had with this episode. I'm sorry, look, I could take... Well,
I love about this is that Murph does it as well.
Yep, yeah. And the Murph one is brilliant, just genius. All the Murph doing that. But my problem is this, right? Okay, I get it's a kid's show, so I was going to let it pass. That they were drawing on a beard with grease. Fine, not a problem, but it's then when the art department with their mega talent, because we've said how amazing the show looks, they couldn't help but give it texture, so the beard has like texture to it. It's like it's painted on with grease. Why does it fucking
true?
That pissed me off. I could not get, like, my neurosparkling little mind could not get over that bit. Just like, okay,
and also this is a gag that only really works in animation, because if that was in live action and it was somebody had just slopped a load, you can tell the difference between a beard and a load of grease.
It's one of those things that it used to happen in black and white movies and you got away with it because it was black and white.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean.
You can only get away with it in animation.
It's
I was willing to that's the step I was willing to take. I was willing to take that leap of logic for a fun animated little joke. And it also calls back to Wright says it calls back to the days of black and white. I think that is an in joke on many levels.
It also plays,
but then to add texture to it, that's when you fuck up the joke for me.
But I think it also plays into it being a kid's show at the end of the day. That kids do that when they go dressing up and it is just painted on. And they think they've got a real beard and they'll go like that as if they're stroking it and all that.
All I'm saying is when the anime, like, they can help themselves, they're like, if you see it's got little sways to it, which, like,
I've not looked that closely, I must admit, but...
For some reason, it just took me out of it. Because I saw the Tribbles and I got why they'd done it to make it more clear, but the Tribbles, their hair looked a bit more flamboyant than usual.
Yeah.
But again, that's to convey it in animation. That's fine. But drawing on beard doesn't do that.
But it doesn't fool Janeway anyway, so it doesn't matter ultimately.
Because my Jacote is not there. I mean, she must have had as much fun as she did with the Arachnia lines. Like, doing this.
Yeah, definitely. And I love the bit, even the whales are evil.
Oh, that's a great line. Even the whales are evil. And they get to call back to it later as well.
So it makes you wonder, in the mirror universe then, presumably the whale probes still attack the Earth, and they still realise that they needed to bring back humpback whales.
Yeah.
But I imagine Star Trek IV played out very, very differently. Did they just go in all phases blazing, steal the whales, and it'd probably been a lot shorter. No.
The whales themselves, when Spock does the mind meld, the whales go, yeah, I'm fucking going with you, sure. Yeah, let's fuck up this planet.
It was a lot shorter that they just went in and beamed them up and no pissing about and shot up the oceanic center.
Yeah.
And the whales being evil, they were up for it. That's
probably, And also, I mean, if you're a fan of the Mirror Universe, last time we were there was the end of Deep Space Nine. And at that point, the Empire had pretty much fallen completely. And the humans were just sort of a little tiny rebellion against the Bajor and Cardassian alliance.
No, the humans were the ones who were coming back and taking back over the Bajor and Cardassian.
Well, that's it. That's what I mean. They were fighting against it. And clearly that has really progressed and they've established the Empire again by this point.
I've got a funny feeling with the mirror universes that there's actually several mirror universes that we pull from.
Well, that would make sense.
It'd make a lot more sense.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I think there's mirror universes.
There's going to be infinite variations on the mirror
universe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If we follow the logic through, yeah, sure.
I like it.
Some of it doesn't follow really. I know they've tried to be good with timelines, but I think there's points where you have to go, no, if we do it, if you're going to keep doing the different shows, your mirror universe, you've got to have, you're going to mess about with your continuity of the mirror universes. There's no way around it apart from it's different mirror universes.
Yeah, and I think it's forgivable. It's just every so often we want to go to the mirror universe and have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And it's fine, except when we go, let's bring back Mirror Vedic Burial. Let's not.
Yeah. It's like I've always thought that I imagine episodes like this for the actors are so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
When they get to ham it up as evil, really evil characters.
Yeah, stuff. Exactly.
And they're allowed to go proper OTT with some of it.
And do you know who Mirror Burial had an affair with? Mu Jakote. It's the ultimate story you guys have been waiting for, where Jakote and Burial.
Can you imagine? It'd be the most boring thing you've ever seen in your life.
One thing I do want to propose, though, is when they do, like, I know we're about to get this, but, like, just a point with him when they go back to the Prime Universe.
Mm-hmm.
It does slightly annoy me that they just ignore the fact they're all in the uniforms and everything. They don't go, it's like, wait a minute, Mirror Universe! Like, you know, I mean, even Mirror Janeway recognizes it straight away. Why does not?
I think she does, but yeah, we'll get there. So,
yeah,
the Langoliers attack, and this is where Mirror Janeway shows that the mirror versions of some of our main characters do tend to show a little bit of good, you know. They like Mirror Spock came through for us in the end. Yeah, she's like, it doesn't mean I'm your friend, but I'll help, sort of thing.
She's also playing into, no, I need these now to survive because they know what we need to do. So I'm going to play along with their thing, and I can imagine if she could have got away with it. As soon as they'd helped save the ship, she'd have them back in Agonizer.
Yeah, oh, maybe, but...
I think because they say to her, if you send us back, these things will fuck off, basically. That's her way out. It's nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
Like, if it was... I think if you're going to suggest that she's got good within her, you had to find a way that she was sending them back without any self-interest. Like, he'd have to give a rousing speech of, like, look, you care for your Chakotay. I'm that.
Maybe.
Like, I've got Janeway at home.
I also think this is all about self-preservation. Why she's...
I'm not sure. I'm willing to give Mirror Janeway the benefit of the doubt.
No,
I think
I want Mirror Janeway to be a proper evil bitch. And
yeah,
I'm sure. Kate Mulgrew had been really annoyed with you taking away.
Maybe she would. Compromise, Mirror Janeway has got a mirror Borg implant, and the Borg are the greatest guys in the universe, in the mirror universe. The Borg are just really nice. They go around helping everybody.
Well, we haven't seen that yet.
I've got a new suggestion. Janeway, I'm with Ellie on this one, that Mirror Janeway is an evil bitch, but Mirror Jakote, who's got the beard, is not only culturally sensitive and he's a really amazing in his role, but also where Spock was the good guy who had the beard, he's the good guy, clearly, because he's the guy in the universe who looks like the bad guy who turns out to be the good guy.
And that makes sense that the beards are actually the good guys with the gore.
All
the ones that we've seen with Gortys turn out to be the good versions.
And that
makes sense because sort of in our universe, it is a it is a stereotype of showing evil to have a goatee. So it makes sense that the goaties are actually good in the Mirror Universe.
Also, let's throw in there that Murph puts on the fake goatee. And despite what Gwyn says, it's like, oh, that's not really necessary, but I like the spirit. I think it is, because I think Mirror Murph can grow a goatee and has one, and he's a good guy as well, because Murphs are always great.
Yeah, Murphs are probably good in any universe.
I already put that up. Yeah, I agree.
I've got to say, I do agree with this. Murph should keep the beard.
Yeah, Murph should. And we would buy the bearded Murph action figure if they ever brought one out, but they
but
don't.
If they put any texture in the beard, I'll be pissed. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. So they get back to...
I just want to draw on one, not textured.
They get back to the real...
Sorry. I love the idea that Murph just wake up every morning and go, take me to security.
And then they get back to the real reality. And I always like it when they do stuff like this. So the doctor says exactly the same things, because of course he would. And then,
Did it give you vibes of Parallels with Worf coming back to the surprise?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what I thought of then.
Yeah. And then Chakotay and Janeway finally get to see each other. And it is played as a romantic reunion. And she notices there's something wrong with his beard as well.
Yeah, I just thought it was weird that they didn't call out the uniforms. Again, it was a very minor point, and I love this episode.
Yeah, so it'd be like if they'd have just said something like, clearly you've got a story to tell, or something like, some acknowledgement that, right, you've not just got off a shuttle. You know,
wait, are you from the Mirror Universe? No, we can explain.
Yeah, if they'd have just shot him on sight.
Yeah.
As soon as Chakotay beamed on, this went, Mirror Chakotay, and just gunned him down.
This is
so good.
That would have been good.
That has really been a golden up.
This is not your dream episode, you two.
No, well, clearly not.
I would actually loved it if they go, it's like, won't it? Mirror uniforms, and they act really mistrustful. They go, "Oh, it's okay. We can explain." And they just did they did an animated freeze frame, like it was the original series ending. Like they're all.
Oh, that'd be good.
We just need the director's cut to come out where Jacoby gets gunned down. So
you're doing the Jacoby gunned down ending. I'm doing the original series mega happy laughing ending.
There we go.
We can do a Wayne's World of this, because
it's a parallel universe episode. So all these endings happened in different timelines. And then Gwen and Dal get a really nice moment at the end as well, so we don't totally overshadow the main crew with Janeway and Chakotay. We get this nice little moment with Gwen and Dal as well. Another really, really strong episode.
You also had a moment earlier where, I forget which of the two episodes it was, but there was a lovely moment where just Gwen, just very kind of like, it was lightly done, but Gwen puts a hand on Dal's hand to reassure him. And it's just, they don't spike the moment. They don't have a commentary on it.
That was
just a nice
moment.
That was
this episode when he was saying that you need to stay here on this step.
Yeah.
And it's just really nice
because you have to be in trouble of going up. I don't want you to risk it. She's like, no, I'll be fine. And then puts her hands and it's like, trust me.
They never overspike those moments, but it's lovely that throughout the series. And I know we haven't talked about all the episodes, but I want a season three to explore some of this shit.
We do need season three.
I don't know
what the viewing figures are like on Netflix for it.
We never hear.
It's renewed or it's cancelled.
Yeah.
And if they're going to cancel it, as I hope they don't, I hope they at least do an announcement so we're not waiting. Like, you know, I hope they don't just
It's probably one of those that I imagine this is one of those series that has done well enough on Netflix that if it was a Netflix show normally, it'd have been greenlit already for season three.
Probably.
But I imagine there's a huge amount of politics involved that Netflix said they'll buy it. And they want an option for a season three if they want it, but I bet there's a lot of politics involved.
I agree. I think it's the only reason why, if this was a usual situation, I'd be like, well, after this time, it's definitely not happening. But because, like you say, the politics and negotiation which would be involved, how it would all work itself out. It could be that they're having so many conversations. Like,
yeah, we don't know.
Well, there was like, a whole thing of when season two went to Netflix. We were all saying it's like, well, they've removed every mention of it, which is weird. And I think I brought up then that so there's a possibility if they are trying to sell it elsewhere that they have to not mention it because there's a grace period where you've got to have it not live to then sell somewhere else. So yeah. You know, so yeah, that could still be happening. We don't know.
And I imagine. If Netflix have bought it, they want the option to be able to do another season if they want it. And it's one of those that I imagine that Netflix, even if it hasn't had the viewing figures they might want, might go, this is worth spending the money just to have an exclusive Star Trek that CBS can't touch and really
see. Yeah.
Discovery, they fucked us over with this. Let's fuck them over.
I can almost guarantee that there's some, like, there will be at least a healthy chunk of people who have signed up to Netflix. Whether it's enough or not, there'll be a healthy amount of people who sign up to Netflix just for Star Trek.
Yeah, you would think.
I think my viewing on every episode at the moment is about 5 times with the rewatches for these shows because I inevitably end up watching the next one or two afterwards.
Yeah.
Because I forget to turn it off. Yeah. And then I watch them again and again for the episodes. And I'd already done a complete watch through.
Yeah.
Well, despite our high praise for Prodigy, we are taking a break from it next week.
We are.
Because as we're recording now, 2 days from now is the actual date of the Bell riots from the DS9 two-parter past tense.
Well, how can you know it'll be happening in 2 days? Do you predict a riot?
Have you seen the news?
And I know I've done that joke 2 weeks in a row. I don't care. Sorry.
That's have you fine. Seen the news of the state of the world? I think we can almost guarantee it'll be a riot somewhere.
It is so troubling how prescient this is. I mean, like, Star Trek really is always sad, but obviously there's... Star Trek's done so many things, there's always going to be a moment you can point to. Like The Simpsons, where people say it's like, oh, it predicts the future. It's like, no, it's done every single moment. So, of course, it's
done.
But the fact that the Bell riots happens to be within a month still, I believe we are, from riots here in this country.
It's close to home in some ways.
But,
yes.
And I hope, but I don't expect that this golden age, which happens in Star Trek, is going to come out of it.
Well, we'll find out next week. Next week we will be covering past tense parts 1 and 2.
But it also worked nicely that it's also our 250th episode.
No, yep. We predicted it. We planned this when we started, like you said last week, Elliot.
Absolutely. There is a master document of every, so
it has timed really nice that we can do a special for our 250th episode.
And in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, we're at RetrekPod on X, we're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on all the social media, including Retrek Model Studios at YouTube.
I have 2 videos I'm trying to get together, but as I keep saying, I'm busy moving and I've got other things.
Yeah, check out Elliot's past work on there. Absolutely. And then Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, similarly, I'm also taking a week off. I just got back from LARPing this weekend, which was magical. Big shout out to all my LARPing brothers and sisters and siblings. Amazing time. But yes, I'm going to take a week off. So go youtube.com/DrSquee. Pick out your favorite entries. There's loads with Star Trek stars, including the re-release of a few Star Trek people, including Patty Yatuzaki, which I've no doubt butchered her name. But just go and check out something. There's always something good in there.
And thanks for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Let's fly.
LLAP and drag off! Biddy, drag off!